My name is Carol Parsonage. Today, Thursday, January 29, 2009, at 12 o'clock noon, I am interviewing Mrs. Lori Love at the Public Library in Georgetown, Texas. This interview will become part of the Georgetown Public Library's oral history collection. This particular project focuses on people's memories of Martha and Carver Stewart and the issues and events of the 1950s and 60s that led to desegregation. Mrs. Locke, I really appreciate you talking with us today.
I'm happy to do it.
I want to ask you first, how long have you lived in Georgetown?
Since I was born in February of 1951.
Okay, so never moved anywhere else?
Yes, I moved away for to go to college.
Okay.
In 1969. And we lived in Austin and Dallas for a few years. But we moved back to Georgetown in 1979, after I had married and had two children.
Okay.
So I had about a 10-year gap in it.
Okay. Well, in looking at the period when desegregation was really an issue in the U.S., if we started with 1954, which is Brown versus Board of Education, and 1964, which is the Civil Rights Act, which really pushed segregation. In that 10-year period, were you in the school system here in Georgetown then?
I was. I started school when I was six, so 1957.
Okay.
And then in 1964, I guess I was in the middle school.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me, then, when desegregation occurred, which here, 1965, is when you would have been in junior high, is that right?
65, 66, I was a freshman in high school.
So you would have been a freshman in high school. Well, the first thing I'd like to do is just take you back earlier than that.
Okay.
And if you would talk to me a little bit about your school experience prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like, what was the school system like for a white child in the segregated school system in Georgetown? What were the schools like? What was your experience?
Elementary school, of course, got my awareness of any of that is pretty minimal. It was now an April school, which was the, at that time there were two schools. There was the elementary school, grades 1 through 6, and then there was the high school, which is now Williams School,
okay.
And then grades 7 through 12.
Okay.
So I was at elementary school, it was open air school. Everybody walked to school and nothing was locked and it was, very free and that sort of thing. So that was very nice. And we had about three or four classrooms per grade. There were Hispanic children, of course, that came to school with us. But certainly no black children. And the black population in Georgetown has never been very large, so my awareness mainly of the black population was just from being at home, just because my father, who was a doctor, would go on house calls.
Okay.
And he would go spend the night in the home sometimes if they were having a baby and that sort of thing. So that's, and I would go with him.
Oh, okay.
On house calls sometimes. Okay. So, so that was mainly my awareness. In junior high, I became aware that the school was building schools that accepted the equal to come into play, and that they built the junior high where I went at the same time they built what's now Carver School to try to avoid integrating.
Now, do you think you were unique in knowing that, or were most of your classmates aware that was going on?
I don't think most of my classmates were aware. I knew it because my dad was either on the school board then or had been, but he was so involved in the civil rights movement that, was talked about over the dinner table. So I was just aware that he didn't think that was a good idea.
Okay.
So I went to, I think it's called McCoy now, which is on Women's Drive.
Yeah.
And that's when I went to eighth grade.
Okay.
At that point, I was aware that there were
things going on, in the room,
that kind of thing. Yeah.
Did you have, you said really you saw the African-American community, mostly through your father, and going with him. Were you aware of the schools, the black schools, and did you ever have any contact with the African American students for, as, on a student basis?
No, not that I really can remember. We had a woman who, you know, worked for us and came to our house and was back, so we just interacted with her. But as far as just people my age, no. And it's amazing to me now that I really wasn't even aware of where the Project Fuel was. I knew Soulbread was, it was in what we call the Ridge, which is where most of the black people live.
Mm-hmm.
But I never, you know, had occasion to go over there. Didn't drive, you know, I didn't go anywhere about my parents.
Right, right.
So no, very limited awareness that on a personal basis, you know, in anything like that.
Mm-hmm. What about the condition of the school you attended? I mean, was it an old school?
Not particularly. The elementary school, as far as I can remember, was in good shape. You know, the original Anglican school, the original grammar school, had been, I'm not sure when they tore it down, but it was in the early 60s, I think. I could be wrong about that.
Okay.
But I don't really have a memory of that.
Okay.
I was young enough to where I didn't pay attention to that. And then they built this other school, so it was fairly new when I was there. Who did that?
What kind of things did you do outside of school? Were you Girl Scout or?
Mm-hmm. I was a Brownie and a Girl Scout. The Girl Scout help was just behind the school, the elementary school, so they just walked over there. And we lived, five or six blocks from the school, so we always walked to school, we walked home for lunch. But I did Brownie and Girl Scout, I did piano lessons. It's the country club in the summertime, and it's swimming, it's just swimming lessons, and plate shopping. Pretty simple. I mean, we just went out and rode our bikes and did what we wanted to do.
And in all of that, very little connection with the African American community.
Very little. Again, the population was very small.
Right.
But there wasn't, in my world, there just wasn't a lot of crossover.
Okay, well now we get to 1965 and you're entering high school and the school is going to be integrated. Recognizing that there still might not have been very many blacks, how did you notice that change?
Well, I knew that a struggle was going on, again, just for being at home and hearing my parents talk about it. And there were committee meetings, of course, with the committee of the Southwestern Department of Learning. So I was aware of the conflicts that were going on in that way. But as far as school was concerned, when they started integrating, there were a few black students in my class. I don't remember that being a big deal.
Did the school say anything to you? Did they call all the white students together and say anything? Or
I don't remember that happening.
Okay.
I just sort of remembered that one day they were there.
And what about your parents? Did they make an effort for you to know what was happening or talk with you in any way about what was happening?
Well, they didn't sit me down and say, you're going to start having black kids in your class or anything like that. I think they just assumed that we would be even like anybody else, and we had certainly been involved in the whole process. So it wasn't going to be a big surprise to us. And it wasn't a big deal. It was different. There were kids we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty rare in those times for anybody new to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it was different. I just don't remember it from the way I perceived it.
No.
To me personally, it was not a big issue.
Okay.
I do remember that one young man moved to Georgetown from New York State. He was black. I guess my junior year. And that made an impression on me because he was different than the other black students that had grown up in Georgetown. He seemed much more articulately dressed differently. He seemed more like the white kid in some way.
Oh, okay.
And the black kids, I think, really just, they kept to themselves. They stuck together.
Right.
Which makes sense. At first. And I guess my only other real big experience was when we played college football.
Okay.
In my junior year.
Okay.
And you know, I didn't really want to do it, but everybody did it, so
right.
I did. And that was an interesting experience for me because the black girls on our team were so much more than we were. They were so much more aggressive and athletic. And they were in there to win. And I didn't think at the time perhaps they were there to prove something. You know,
right, right.
I can imagine that they wouldn't feel that way. But they were, it got rough out there. And we were used to everything just being kind of sweet and, you know, we were out there having fun. And
yeah.
All of a sudden that was what they were really out there to play football.
Speaking of football or sports in general, one thing we hear is that it was sports had a lot to do in helping immigration.
Absolutely.
Did that happen pretty quickly? Were there African American students that were good at sports, I mean, right away that you saw?
Yes, I guess it was pretty much right away because, you know, they didn't start integrating until I was a freshman or sophomore. I don't really remember paying much attention to it until I was a junior. It was a graduate back then. I could be wrong. But absolutely, by the time, you know, I was a junior in high school, there weren't many black people at all in town. But Michael Daniel was a really fine athlete. And I can remember being in the stands and some of the people who were the most adamantly opposed to integrating. You know, softening a little bit just because you started winning football games.
Yeah, yeah.
So that did help. But I think that happened fairly quickly. I know there was some talk that it was hard to get the black kids to come out for the team sometimes. They didn't feel accepted or equal in that sort of thing.
Okay.
So that's been a problem.
Yeah. And what about things like the band? I took you a step back and asked you, were you involved in any of those things? Band or anything?
I was involved in everything that the high school offered except teacher farmers, and they didn't let me be a part of that. But, yeah. I don't think there was a club in school, but I wasn't in it. I was a drum major in the band, so, yeah, I was definitely involved in the band.
So did you see the black children become involved in any of those things? Were they in any of the clubs with you or in the band? Or?
I'm trying to think of the pictures in the river. Not much. In the band, I think there were one or two girls in my class, that were in the band, but I'm not absolutely positive. It was not a big,
okay.
It wasn't a big presence for me.
Okay.
And in the other clubs, I don't think so. Not much.
Okay. So they were coming to school, but they were maybe not getting as involved in education as that can be outside school.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my name.
And your circle of friends, did they, in the time that you were in high school, did that begin to include African American?
No, not at all.
No, that was not what I had.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very, pretty separate. I don't remember it being in my consciousness necessarily because they were black, although I'm sure there are people that were the case. But just because their parents weren't friends with our parents, they didn't socialize. I mean, we didn't come into contact with them at all. And in class, we were classmates and friendly, but no, it was pretty separate. There was no violence, there was no, that I remember, not much tension. It was cordial, but that's kind of what it
was. Well, I'm going to come forward to again, because you've then been a parent of students in the Georgetown school district.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell if there's been a change for them? Was it, did you see in your children more violence part of the class?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot different. Because they went to school, of course, from kindergarten on up, with families in the class, so it wasn't a big change for them. I'm trying to think about good friends. I'm sure they had friends in school, not best friends, that they brought home. Ebony Rose comes to mind, and she was the age of my daughter. So she worked for me when I owned Laurie's, which is a
Okay.
Gourmet takeout. And she and Katie were friends. Again, not close friends, not close friends.
And what kind of time frame would that have been that your daughter had these things?
That would be, she was born in 77, so, you know, the 80s and early 90s.
Okay, okay, that's true. I'd like to talk a little bit about what you heard at Cannon because your parents were so involved in the process. And what is your perspective of your father and mother's view of integration?
Well, my complete understanding is that it was a positive thing, it was a necessary thing, that it was an injustice to keep schools segregated and that we would just stop. You know, that was informed by religion and just by what they thought. My dad in particular was involved in that more than my father. And he was involved with integrating that society with the Virginia Methodist Society of Flemington and the schools and had been doing that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, there was a lot of opposition, obviously, you know. And so I got really a little more caught up in it than I think in some ways he did, just because I took it as, you know, they were opposing to him personally.
Okay.
And so as a child or as a teenager, you know, I really felt deeply that this is a horrible thing and you know, these bad people needed to stop asking what they were doing. So, we weren't really involved in the conversations a whole lot. But, you know, we dinner table, we ate dinner together, and I was on the table, whatever the topic of the day was, you know.
Did you take any of that discussion out into your friendship and discuss it with your friends?
I'm sure I did. I don't have specific memories of it. I do know that of my close friends, I would guess, I had a few close friends whose parents worked at Southwestern University. Tom Swift, about a week of being a student, a few fathers and professors. But the majority of my friends, that was not the case. So the majority of my friends came from homes that really opposed the university. My few friends that were more aligned with Southwestern, of course, were on the other end of that argument.
And yet, you still had those friends when integration occurred, mm-hmm. and their reaction was?
Around me, I think they kept probably more of their inflammatory ideas to themselves and didn't express them when they were around me.
Okay.
I'm sure they did at some point, and we probably got cross about it. You know, I was aware that they, well, I have one vivid memory, a classmate, the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, we were at a high school baseball game in the stands, and someone had a portable radio from this area. And we had the news on for some reason, and they said, you know, guess what, this has happened. And a friend of mine, because I won't call her name, she's still here, but she immediately jumped up and just let out a swoop of delight and screamed, "The only good news is a dead man," you know. And that was in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, there were black people and my father's a dead man. So some of my friends, that was their family reason.
Okay.
We managed to all stay friends, and again, it didn't ever get to be a real.
And it didn't boil over in the integration of the schools. I mean, as far as
it was really handled quite well. I'm sure there was. I know there were some fights in the gym, or you know that sort of thing. But nothing really upsetting. The only upsetting time I remember was with the Hispanic kids who got mad at there was a fight in the gym that carried over into the halls of the high school. And I got caught in the middle of that.
But by that time, the Hispanics had been in this school
forever.
A long time.
Oh, yeah. So that was just sort of general racial prejudice that, you know, exists and still exists for some people. But, you know, that one is the only one that just really turned out for me.
That's really good. I really have ask you the questions I wanted to ask you. Have you given me a good view of a white child in a segregated school, and then dealing with immigration and how it's going to be different? Is there anything else you can think of that you want to ask me to do?
No, when I think of the whole time period, mainly I just think of the frustration and the frustration, I guess is the best word, that I felt just at how hard it was to get the school board to follow, you know, federal mandates and all of the roadblocks that they threw up, that they sort of made up as a reason why they couldn't integrate.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they didn't want to integrate, but it became all of course other excuses. So I really mainly just think about how frustrating and angry I was that my dad was having to go through all of that. You know. But from a personal point of view, it just really was not, it didn't have a big effect on me. We just sort of rolled with it, you know, and I'm sure that the kids in my class who were the ones who had to come in from college or have a different viewpoint of it. But it was smooth as far as I was concerned.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.